President Trump says his administration is going to pursue welfare recipients who are cheating the government.
The president says welfare reform is on his agenda, claiming spending on the poor is rife with abuse.
Some people are really taking advantage of our system from that standpoint, and we are going to be looking very, very strongly, therefore, at welfare reform.
Trump made his comments at the outset of a cabinet meeting. He provided no evidence to back up his claim, nor did he say what the focus of such reform would be. Trump also said he hasn't given up on repealing the health insurance law and will press ahead for tax cuts, on which he modified his frequently debunked claim that the United States is the world's highest taxed nation to one of the highest taxed. I'm Warren Levinson.
Welfare reform is very personal to me for any number of reasons, not the least of which is I grew up on this particular program, and I've not been shy about expressing that here. It's not that I am on welfare now, but I was. And of course, at that time, it was shameful. I go to school and my Pro Wings, those were the shoes that I wore, Pro Wings. And everybody knew, because you got shoes that pay less, you're probably on welfare. And I remember asking my mother one time what she did for a living. What do you do for a living? And I vaguely remember her having a job at one time or another. She was wildly unstable. One of these folks that just went out and had herself a bunch of kids. And yeah, I understand those people become the targets whenever we talk about welfare reform. And what? But she got these checks every month, at the first of the month. I was young and ignorant. And she said to me, "Well, son, I paid into a system while I was a part of the workforce. And now I'm just collecting my money back out of that system." So one of my teachers asked me what my mom does for a living. And I go, "Oh, she's home. So she works at night." "No, she's home. So how do you guys make money?" And I said, "Well, she paid into a system for years and she's just collecting that money back now." "Huh. Interesting. What is that system?" "I don't know." Obviously, what my mother was doing was she was not wrong. When she worked, she paid into the tax base. And paying into that tax base, well, when she wasn't working, she went ahead and just took that tax base back by being on welfare. I remember realizing that at a certain point in my life. I went, "Oh, she just lied to me. She just filled me with crap." But being on welfare was considered so shameful. I'd flip on the television and I'd hear about these dang gum welfare recipients, right? Taking all of our money, staying home and doing whatever the hell they want while the rest of us are out here working. I have seen this bumper sticker on so many pickup trucks. It says, "Work harder. Millions on welfare depend on you." And it makes you think that there is a class of people that are just sitting around eating bonbons, watching soap operas, and driving their Cadillacs. And that's the picture that's been put out there. Obviously, nothing could be further from the truth. And so we have this preoccupation in America that the problem isn't the ultra-rich. I live in Portland, Oregon, really close to the airport. And from our airport, I see jets taking off all day. And when those things take off, and they generally take off in pairs, sometimes they'll take off in pairs or two pairs, those things are a lot of money to put in the air. I remember training with the Spokane Sheriff's Department for a little while and learning that it cost $10,000 an hour to put their chopper in the air. So they didn't have a lot of money, so it's pretty rare they put that bird in the air. What do you think it costs to put these jets in the air? And I see these jets taking off and landing all day from PDX, from Portland International Airport. And I go, what the hell does that cost? And why is nobody concerned about that? The military takes up more than half of our federal budget. But there's no concern about that. But welfare, oh my God, welfare takes up 0.1% of our budget. My word. We've got to do something about welfare. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 225. My name is Melvin. I thank you so much for being here. So the White House began circulating a draft in late September, so late last month. And the draft was calling to agencies to review the regulations and propose new rules that conform to a broader set of principles to either streamline, eliminate duplicative services. There's obviously too damn many of these things. Let's sort of get them down to one. They wanted to set metrics to measure accountability. And they say create greater cooperation with state and local governments. What that really means is find a way to cut all of these things out. So when we talk about welfare, people think that welfare is you go to human services or health and human services, local welfare office, and you simply say, I want welfare, give me government money, free money, free money. But that's not what welfare is. Welfare is a lot of different things. First of all, it's food stamps. That's the SNAP program. Unemployment insurance. That's a part of the welfare program. Medicaid. Also a part of the welfare program. The TANF. Those are the cash benefits. That's the temporary assistance for needy families. There's WIC. Women, infants, and children. This is for women that are about to have babies or had just had babies, and this gets them the basic food that they need, cereal, milk, cheese, things of that nature. But for some folks, my God, that's a bridge too far. Social Security, that's also, these are all welfare programs. So the myth that spread on conservative talk radio. And now the Trump is talking about going after welfare recipients. I'm hearing it. Oh, here they come in their Cadillacs and their Escalades and they're taking all of our money while you work your butt off. They're taking our money. And it's just not true. So there's an article over at groundswell.org. And it's the seven lies about welfare that many people believe are fact. And I know I've heard all of these expressed in conservative media. The first is that welfare payments are too high. So take the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, formerly known as food stamps. They used to be actual stamps, and now they're cash. They put it on a card. The average benefit per person is $1.50 per meal. Think about that. Feeding yourself on $1.50 per meal. Try feeding yourself adequately or nutritionally on $1.50 a meal. That's it. That's what they get. The other myth is that welfare recipients are lazy. They just get the money, they just sit around, they collect, while you go out and work your butt off. The idea that most people on welfare are able-bodied adults who are just too lazy to get a job and make an honest living is utterly false. Most benefit programs require recipients to work in order to collect. Take TANF, for example. Single parents receiving this grant must work at least 30 hours per week in order to be eligible, and two-parent families must work between 35 and 50 hours a week. The fact is that blue-collar wages in America are simply not high enough to support workers in today's economy. So that's the other thing. These gigantic employers, I'm going to take Walmart because they're probably the worst. These gigantic employers that move into these towns undercut all the local mom-and-pop shops. And then once they get a gigantic local workforce, they go ahead and just slash everyone's wages. I've known a few people that work for Walmart, and they have told me that as a part of the training, there are a couple of videos that you see. One of the videos that you see is about resisting union participation. And you can now find these videos. They were very protected for years. But you can find them on YouTube now. The videos that Walmart shows about how you don't need a union. Right? It's like you don't need democratic participation. You don't need a country. You don't need a government. These are all democratic bodies. And they say you don't need a union. And they show you this video. Someone comes along and tells you that you need a union. That would probably be the biggest union in the United States. Right now, I think the biggest union is the postal workers. But I think Walmart would be even larger, or it would come pretty damn close to the postal workers union. If that many unionized workers, they'd be making a fair wage, and they'd get paid time off and all this other stuff, a lot of things that most of them don't get now. And the other thing that Walmart does is after they hire you, at $8 or $9 or $7.50 an hour, whatever the hell they hire you at, they go ahead and hand you a pamphlet. And they say, hey, here is how you can get benefits now that you're working. As it said before, a lot of places require that you do some work. And Walmart says, hey, we'll hire you for $7-$8 an hour. You come in here, you work 30 hours a week, and then you can go apply for welfare benefits. That's a thing. So I had a discussion recently with a good friend of mine, and we were talking about the minimum wage. we disagree about raising the minimum wage. But we disagree. We both want to see the minimum wage raised, but we come down in different places, both in the cause of how low the minimum wage is and in the reality of what would happen if the minimum wage was raised. And one of the things that he consistently pointed out to me is he says, look, they're just going to pass it on to us. And to some degree, that's true. They will. It would be better to have a tax policy that made them want to pay themselves less, because these CEOs, I don't know how many millions of dollars they freaking need, but it'd be a better idea to have a tax policy where they paid themselves less and put more into their companies, because that would automatically give more to the workers. So raising the minimum wage, just simply raising the minimum wage, yeah, it's very possible that they would go ahead and just pass that on. Changing the tax policy so that if they paid themselves more than X amount of dollars, they would have to pay a 91% tax rate, what it was under Eisenhower. Yeah, that would be more effective. But for the people that are suffering right now, we should raise it right now. So, but what about passing it on to us? Hold on a second. It's already been passed on to us. If you are one of these people that is just beside yourself upset about welfare, oh my God. Well, then you should be pissed. You should be absolutely furious that you subsidize Walmart workers. And it's not just them, it's other low-wage employers too. So yeah, you'll have to pay more at Walmart, but you're already paying more because you pay into the tax base, which pays in to welfare. So you're already footing that bill. I remember this debate during the talk about healthcare, and they go, "Well, dingum, you'll get healthcare. I'm gonna pay for your healthcare." Well, yeah, but here's the thing, ding dong, you're already paying for it. I don't understand how folks don't understand how this works. Look, I'm not some brilliant economist. I'm a blue collar bozo, you know, that drives a truck and spins records and then once a week steps into my office and barks into a microphone for an hour. I'm nobody. But am I wrong about the things that I'm saying? TFYCPO@gmail.com.
What's the solution to corporate media?
I think we have got to think about ways that the Democratic Party, for a start, starts funding the equivalent of Fox Television. Hmm. Number two, I think the pressure has got to be put on media to say that, you know what, maybe as a nation, the American people are entitled to hear real discussions on real issues. You tell me, you're in the media, what percentage of media discussion in this campaign is about process? Who's going to win in West Virginia? How many delegates does Hillary Clinton have? What dumb thing did Donald Trump say yesterday rather than, why are we the only country in the industrialized world not to guarantee health care to all people? How much discussion have you heard on TV about the fact that the top 0.1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%? That's the kind of discussion we need, and the American people need to be engaged in that. So we have got the demand of corporate media, and that's going to be hard because this is against their own best interest. NBC is owned by who?
Comcast, our overlords.
All right. Yeah. Comcast is not one of the most popular corporations in America, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Et cetera, et cetera. And I think the American people are going to have to say to NBC and ABC and CBS and CNN, you know what? Forget the political gossip. Politics is not a soap opera. Talk about the real damn issues facing this country.
I love that right there in front of an NBC anchor, that's Bernie sitting out, Rachel Maddow. He's right there. Who owns you? He just said it right to her face. Now, I love Rachel Maddow. I think she's fabulous. But Bernie makes a good point. When it comes to ABC and CBS and even MSNBC, Fox News and CNN, all of these channels have these massive corporate backers. And so we have a Congress that represents nobody. We have a president that not only represents nobody, but that nobody wants. Nobody wants this guy to serve anymore. There's maybe 200 billionaires in a country of 307 million people. There's maybe 200 billionaires and a couple of brain-dead rednecks that are sitting in a ditch somewhere and shoving blueberries up their nose that want this guy to be president. Nobody really wants this guy to be president. And yet, there he is. And how did we get there? Oh, corporate media. And corporate media is not political media. corporate media is simply there because it covers the horse race and the car crashes and from time to time, kittens and puppies. But really, it's just there to entertain. It's not there to inform. And so we end up with a lot of people that believe a lot of things that simply are not true. One of the more egregious ones, and this, of course, came up in the most recent presidential campaign, is that undocumented immigrants are all on welfare. Nope, nada, not possible, not happening. No, quoting here. In fact, undocumented immigrants in the U.S. are not eligible for any benefits except emergency Medicaid. Yeah, their kids can attend public schools, but undocumented immigrants are actually contributing more to the American economy than they take away, and they have no access to food stamps or the welfare programs despite being the lowest paid in the nation, so they get these jobs that, by the way, they don't take them. These jobs are given to them, okay? Some crooked employer gives them these jobs. They don't take these jobs from you, and then they end up paying taxes, and then they pay into a tax base that they never get to collect from. Knocking down the myths. Myth number four, people use welfare to support their drug habits. So there have been a lot of Republican-run states lately that have said all they're doing is they're driving the Cadillacs and they're eating the bonbons and they're doing drugs with my money while I'm out here earning this money. They're sitting home and they're doing drugs. So in Wisconsin and a few other red states, they said, you know what? I bet that's true. There's no evidence that says it's true. But you know what? I bet you it's true. So let's do this. Let's start testing all these welfare recipients. And they spent millions of dollars testing these welfare recipients. And it turns out that less than 1% of those people collecting welfare failed the drug test. And so the idea was, find out that they're on drugs, and if they're on drugs, they're clearly supporting their drug habit with welfare money, so kick them off so that they die in the streets, because America, freedom. But it kicked off less than 1%. We spent more money testing them than the money that we saved by kicking them off the system. The other myth is that the welfare queen is hoodwinking us all. So this was Ronald Reagan, who said, there's a woman in Chicago. She has 80 names, 30 addresses, 12 Social Security cards. She's getting Medicaid, food stamps. She's collecting welfare under each of these names. And her tax-free income is over $150,000. Thus was born the infamous welfare queen. Here's the thing. It doesn't exist. The media went looking for this woman. It does not exist. Nobody's living high on the hog by collecting welfare. The other myth is that welfare is not effective. Look, still poor people everywhere. It's not effective. All right, dum-dum, stick with me a minute. That's not how this works. So what we should be doing is looking at the improvements that have been made because of it. In 2013, for example, quoting here, food stamps helped lessen the burden of poverty on 4.8 million people. They are still impoverished. So there is still an incentive to go out and find work, which will pay better than welfare does. But for those that are on poverty, this did reduce the amount of poverty that they existed. The Earned Income Tax Credit, the EITC, and the Child Tax Credit kept 8 million hardworking families from falling under the poverty line. And yes, those tax breaks, those are welfare. I don't understand why we think welfare when we think black people living in the hood. Welfare are all of these government breaks. If Social Security didn't exist, 27 million more people would be poor. So, and then the last myth is that you on the other side of this microphone, you are never going to need welfare. You think about all the programs that encompass welfare. I find that when it comes to talking about this kind of stuff, the best thing is a personal example. Now, you could find yourself on any number of welfare programs for any number of reasons. It happened to me. Post living at my mom's house, after my wife went back to school, and I was working several jobs at that time, and then by the time she started going through graduate school, well, the bills became a little bit more than we could handle. The money that I was bringing in from my five or six jobs or whatever the hell it was probably more like three, it just wasn't covering it. And we had two babies and all these. And so what do? We went ahead to see if we qualify for food stamps. And we did. And we got the food stamps. And it helped carry us along. Now, this is while I was working two jobs. You know, and my wife was getting her degree. We went ahead and got those food stamps for about 6 or 7 months. And it was pretty freaking nice to have. She got a job immediately out of school. And poof, they went away. And that was it. And it helped us cross that bridge. So I hear my dad barking and screaming about welfare all the time. And I've never told him. I've never told him that I did that. And that was probably 8, 9 years ago when we did that. I've never told him that I did that. Because I just know that if I told him about that, that I actually use this program for what it's for, the shame would rain down on me like 1,000 conservative fireballs. And that's unfortunate that I can't even talk openly about that kind of thing, because the lies that have been spread about folks on welfare has made so many people completely irrational.
Roosevelt came in and defied his own class. He was from the upper class. And he transformed what American government should be in terms of protecting the interest of working families. He revolutionized the role of government, and he had the courage to stand up to what he called the economic royalists, I call the billionaire class today, and look them in the eye and say, you know what, you hate me, and that's fine. I accept your hatred. I accept it with pride, because I'm going to stand with working families. So FDR was a hero as well.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I have to point that out. Yes, what he was talking about with FDR right there. FDR pointed out, and this is the ruling class. The reason we're having this fight about welfare right now is because the ruling class would like for you to fall further into poverty, because they would really like some tax breaks. And they got these tax breaks that are coming down the pike, and my God, they want these tax breaks. But they can't get their tax breaks until you are just a little bit more poor.
Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
History doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but as the old saying goes, it does tend to rhyme. So what is welfare costing you if you are a working person? Ah, yes, I'm glad you asked this question. Thank you. So if you make $50,000 a year, let's just make that for the number's sake, $50,000 a year. If you make $50,000 a year, this program costs you, are you ready for it? Drum roll, please. No, wait, I didn't cut a drum roll. Okay, if you make $50,000 a year, you are spending $36 per year. That's it, $36. $36 to give somebody a meal, a substandard meal, but a meal. $36 to maybe give them a place to live. $36 to help a pregnant woman. If you're pro-life, that's really where you should be. $36. That's all it costs you. $36 a year. But what does American business cost you? Because remember, welfare is all of these different programs. And we have this massive corporate welfare program. So if you make $50,000, what does corporate welfare cost you? Well, it generally costs the average American family $6,000 a year in subsidies. What the hell are those? Well, when you pay for health insurance the way we pay for it now, you're paying way more to get way less. Where do you think that extra money goes? That subsidizes your fellow Americans, plus it pays for these gigantic CEOs to make even more money. And Walmart. Right? Companies like that. I know I'm picking on them and I don't care. They can come after me. You're Walmart. No one likes you. You apply for a job with them. You sit down for your orientation. They tell you you're going to make peanuts if you're lucky. And then they tell you how to apply for welfare. You pay for that. That kind of stuff costs you lots of money. And there are tons of other subsidies. You know, there are tax breaks that they get. They go, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And it's not, it's a lie. It's not true. We don't have the highest corporate tax. It's a flipping lie. It's 30 or 35%. Nobody pays that. Some people pay even less than that. And all of those subsidies that they get to claim in order to bring down that effective tax rate, you pay for that. But by all means, let's dump on the people that are on welfare.
Is income inequality a problem in this country? Is it a problem that Republicans want to address? It is. And frankly, the president's policies have made income inequality worse. All the regulations that are coming out of Washington make it more difficult for employers to hire more people. Chief amongst those, I would argue, is Obamacare, which basically puts a penalty or a tax on employers for every new job they create.
According to a New York Times study by Louise Story, it calculated that the state and local government provide at least $80 billion in subsidies to corporations. Over 48 corporations received over $100 million each in corporate subsidies. GM was, of course, the biggest, with a total of $1.7 billion extracted from 16 different states. But Shell, Ford, Chrysler all received $1 billion each. Amazon, Microsoft, Prudential, Boeing, and casinos in Colorado and New Jersey, well over $200 million each. The fast food industry, banks, retail, they all get these gigantic. But let's go after the folks that are starving to death. You're going to have to forgive me, but I just don't understand.
We're staying home. More people are staying home, millennially speaking, than actually moving out for the first time in history, really. Why? Number one, the economy doesn't have the jobs for these people. Right. So the bottom line is everybody would like to live on their own. These kids are high. They're high on pot. They're high on Facebook. They're high on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. So they can't be bothered to cobble together three jobs. They're very busy.
I don't think that many kids are using pot, are they?
They are. You know what? As these states legalize pot, it's everybody and his sister and his brother who's coming in for a medical marijuana license. Now it's going to be recreational. That's the Obama America. Get high, stay home, don't be autonomous.
So the thing that we're talking about a lot right now is the $4 trillion in tax cuts that are coming down the line, and I'm going to be talking about these a lot, because this would be the final straw for the Republicans, which is to say, this particular thing, if they're able to get these $4 trillion in tax cuts passed, honestly, this could be the thing that finally breaks government just enough for them. So it's called the two Santa Claus theory. And every time we have a Democratic president, they say, well, you can't, we have to cut, right? Because the thinking during the 60s, pointed out by Jude Winiski, was that they like the Democrats because that's the party of the Santa Claus, right? So we have to get them, the Democratic Party, to shoot Santa Claus. So when they're in power, the Republicans, we need to scream about the national debt now. Oh my God, we need to lose our minds about the national debt because it's the worst thing ever. But then, when the Republicans are in power, they can spend with impunity. No problem. Spend as much as you want if you're a Republican president. Quit talking about the deficit and all these other things. No more worries, because you are now Santa Claus. It's the two Santa Claus theory. Make the Democrats shoot Santa Claus, and then you can be Santa Claus when you come in. And I remember this during the Bush administration. You know, when Clinton was president, he spends too much money. And then Bush came in and cut taxes twice and started a very expensive war. Now, that's cool. No worries there. That's not going to cost anything. Article over at the New York Times by Paul Krugman, and he's just going off lately about this. This is about, he's writing about this on a near daily basis. And quoting here, according to a new CBS poll, almost 60% of the American public believes that the current Republican tax plan favors the wealthy. The plan does indeed favor the wealthy, overwhelmingly and undeniably. But it's more shocking that as many as 40% of Americans do not realize this. Overall, the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center estimates that by 2027, almost 80% of the gains from the plan will go to the top 1%, just 12% of those gains to the middle 60% of Americans. And more than a quarter of the middle-class families would actually see their taxes go up. All of these policies that punish you, the working people, and only help the super rich, you get to pay for every one of these. But the thinking is that if we just give these trillionaires more trillions, and by the way, how much is enough? How much is too much? If we just give them more trillions, my God, that's all they need. They've been waiting to hire people. but they can't hire people because their tax rates are through the freaking roof, right? Zero is just too big a number for some of these corporations. What are we going to do to help them out? Clearly, these captains of industry just want to help people. They want to help everybody. They want to help you, the middle class. They can't wait to just come out and help you. So what are you going to do in order to help them? I got a clip here. I've played it on the show before, but it begs repeating. And it's Hillary Clinton talking with some of the titans of industry that she knows and says, hey, if we did this one little thing, how would you respond?
There was a recent survey that was done with the heads of major American corporations. And they were asked this question. If you could make an investment today that you know would make the company more profitable, say it was R&D, say it was plant and equipment, say it was investing in training your workers, and you knew that within 5 to 10 years you'd have so much good returns to show, but it would cost you a penny off your stock price to do it, would you do it? And every one of them said no. So I knew one of the people who'd been asked, an iconic American corporation, and I called and I said, were you in this survey? Yes. You were asked this question? Yes. Clearly it was unanimous. You said, no, you wouldn't do it. What does that mean? I know the kind of person you are. I know that you are trying to build a great company. The answer was, I'd be killed. The market would kill me. Activist shareholders would kill me. So I would be spending all my time fending off this attack on me and the company. I wouldn't even get to doing the work that we want to do. That's crazy. You know, that to me is not wealth creation for the long term. It's not how we're going to grow this economy, how we're going to have broad, inclusive prosperity.
I study a lot of history, and as such, I see so many of the same issues come up again. But usually when I see these issues come up, they're from decades and decades ago. I have been doing this show for about just under 5 years now, I believe. And I think it's coming up on 5 years in December. And what I've noticed is it's not just history over the long, you know, the long stretch of time, the long period of time, that it just keeps the same thing over and over and over again. In just the 5 years I've done this show, I end up covering a lot of the exact same things over and over again because these things keep coming up. It's the exact same fights that we're having over and over again. And I think a large part of it is because people just don't pay attention. They don't understand. And it's mad frustrating to do this and to put this stuff out there, to get out there with my fists and my feet and join the fight, only to have these ignorant Nimrods, you know, go home and watch the Kardashians. And I'm not saying that people should listen to Melvin. Who cares? Melvin does his own thing. He's off doing other stuff. But the information itself, you should be getting it from somewhere. And you should care about it. Yeah, I understand it's not Kylie Jenner's pregnant, oh my flipping lord. Yeah, it's not. Who cares? She's banging it out with some dude. Who cares? Well, obviously you care. Or some of you care. Someone definitely cares. Because the fact that this $4 trillion tax cut is going to land with a thud. That the same folks that scream their guts out about how much they hate the government have no problem passing these laws that are only going to benefit a couple of hundred people. A couple of hundred ultra millionaires, billionaires. The fact that this law is just with a thud, no problem. But the fact that you want access to healthcare, that's a national crisis. The fact that you need food. Oh, no, we can't be bothered with that. Absolutely not. That right there is going to cost too much money. But this thing, helping out these billionaires, man, they can't jump on this fast enough.
When it comes to a woman having to make a very personal choice, in that case, my Republican colleagues love the government and want the government to make that choice for every woman in America. If that's not hypocrisy, I don't know what hypocrisy is.
And these cuts that they're talking about making, just so that we can give billionaires, millionaires, even more money. Because remember, the thinking is that if you're poor, you have too much money. And if you're rich, you have too little money. For those of you that are out there and saying that you are pro-life, you need to really dissect that term and figure out what that really means for you. Because I'm pretty certain that you're not. Because if you're conservative, you voted for this president, you're backing this budget, or you're simply not paying attention when you consider yourself to be pro-life, I think you need to realize that these cuts aren't just going to hurt everyday working people. These cuts are going to kill
millions of families in this country where the breadwinner is making $8, $9, $10 an hour, can't afford to feed their families adequately. Republican budget cut nutrition programs, including the program for low-income pregnant women and their babies, by many, many billions of dollars. And then to add insult to injury, to tell you really what the priorities are of the Republican Party, is after cutting health care and education and nutrition, they provided over $250 billion in tax breaks to the top 0.2%.
The information is everywhere about this particular issue and issues just like it. We live in the information age. Cameras, televisions, and computer screens, and newspapers. I mean, the information is everywhere. And in this age, with so many eyes, right, there's two eyes for every person in America. Take 307 million times two, 614 million eyes. Now, there's a few blind people out there, so not all those eyes work. But you know what? There's probably a smartphone and a camera and a webcam. You know, there's probably 10 or 15 of those for every single person in America. So we're talking about over a billion eyes out there. And it's really hard to hide this kind of equality. And yet, people have managed to still not see what's going on.
An inequality that was once tolerated because people didn't know how unequal things were, now won't be tolerated because everybody has a cell phone and can see how unequal things are.
All right, before I get out of here, I want to cover a couple of other things. I want to talk about the FBI, Koch brothers, Georgia, carnage over fear, and let us start with the opioid crisis. So last week, President Trump declared a public health emergency. Right? He says it's a public health emergency with the opioid crisis. And think about drugs, right? They said all these people on welfare, they're all on drugs, which is to say that they're getting drugs from the drug dealer on the corner, right? The guy who sort of shakes your hand and you give him the money, he gives you the dope and you're gone. You guys just pass each other on the street, right? That's the crooked kind of drug dealing. But if you're big pharma, you know, if you're Eli Lilly or any of these companies, well, then that kind of drug dealing is okay. And over the last number of years, we've had these drug dealers, these billionaire pharma companies that have decided to push their dope on us for pain and all the rest. And that was the time we said, we can't take opioids because they're too addictive. So the pharma industry figured, they said, well, we've went ahead and redone this whole thing. And we've got a different formula now for opioids, and you don't have to worry about it. You're not going to get addicted. You can take opioids now. And now we're losing to overdoses 147 people a day. 147 people a day to opioid overdoses. And there are now drugs that you can buy to help you with what they refer to as opioid-induced constipation. And the ads run on TV. Are you having trouble taking a dump because you're taking so many freaking opioids? These are the ads that run on our television screens. But for some reason, those drug dealers are okay. But what's the problem with him simply saying an emergency and not a national crisis? Well, it goes like this. What he just did says that the Health and Human Services can take some of their own resources that they already have, that have already been allocated to them, and they can take those same resources and they can put it in to the opioid crisis. But it doesn't free up any new money. Had he said it was a national emergency, that would have given them more money specifically to fight this. So what he did in effect was, and this is one of the things he ran on, was the opioid crisis. What he did in effect was said, yeah, there's a crisis, but we're not going to do anything about it. The other thing is, this week, the FBI, of course, you've heard a lot about the JFK files being released. There was a 25-year window on this. It's passed back in 1992. The Congress back in 1992, I think, passed this. And they said in 25 years, these documents having to do with the JFK assassination have to be released. And then, of course, that falls on Trump's watch. And he says, we're going to release it. And so that got a ton. That got a ton of news. But there was another release that you probably didn't hear too much about that you probably should have. And per a FOIA request, the FBI has had to release a bunch of documents pertaining to the Sandy Hook massacre, the Sandy Hook white Christian terrorist attack that happened almost 5 years ago. And what's happened to these families since the Sandy Hook massacre is that they have been emotionally terrorized by people that watch and listen to InfoWars. See, a lot of folks, and this is happening now with the Vegas shooting too, there are a lot of folks who cannot process the fact that their beloved guns did this kind of damage, caused this kind of carnage. They cannot handle it. So they come up with these conspiracy theories. And Alex Jones championed the one that these are crisis actors. This didn't really happen. These children aren't really dead. And these families who had to lose their 5 and 6 year olds slaughtered in their first grade classroom have now been terrorized by these Alex Jones disciples since this happened, telling them that their children are not dead. Their children were never real. This never really happened. And to think about, like, going through all of that. One of them filed a FOIA request. And so here's the thing about conspiracy theories, and that's what this is. This is a conspiracy theory. Releasing relevant information that maybe counters the conspiracy will not quell the conspiracy. Quite the opposite. It's actually only going to strengthen the conspiracy. People are only further going to believe the conspiracy. There's nothing that can debunk a BS theory like this. So with this release from the FBI, what you're likely going to see are these families being terrorized, again, emotionally terrorized. And it was pointed out by an anchor this week, I think it was Rachel Maddow, that we're coming up on 5 years for this, which is to say that we're coming up on a time where these children have been dead longer than they were on this earth. And all of these Alex Jones people, all these Alex Jones disciples are going to get this new information. They're going to make all kinds of hay about it, and they're going to terrorize these poor families even further. I wanted that to be on your radar. The Koch brothers are spending millions of dollars to get rid of Tammy Duckworth. Why do they want to get rid of Tammy Duckworth? And this is pretty cut and dry. This goes to the tax cut thing. One of the people that's really fighting the tax cuts tooth and nail right now is a congressman named Tammy Duckworth. And so they have said that they want her the hell out of Congress because they want these tax cuts. Now, wait a minute. We were told that these tax cuts are going to benefit you and I, working people. These tax cuts, these are for us. Then why is the Koch brothers, why are the Koch brothers spending millions of dollars to kick her out of Congress because these tax cuts are so important to them? Is it because Charles and David Koch care so much about what happens to you? This story is a big glaring headline to me that really speaks to the fact that this is exactly what this is. This proves that these tax cuts, this is who it's really for. It's really for the Kochs and people of their like. And it has absolutely nothing to do with us. Moving over to Georgia. So there's a lawsuit in Georgia over the voting machines. So Karen Handel and Ossoff that ran for that seat that was vacated by one of Trump's cabinet appointees a number of months ago, Ossoff was incredibly popular, insanely popular. You know, he was in this gigantic field and just rose above them all. You know, he was ahead in the polls when it was him and Karen Handel. And Karen Handel still managed to run away with the election. How is that? So they vote on voting machines in Georgia, these open source voting machines that don't have a paper trail and can't be verified. And with this lawsuit that came out this past week, all of the servers containing the information from that election were all quietly wiped out. Now, for those of us that think that it's that there's all kinds of illegal in-person voting happening out there, think about this. If you do that, and there were a couple of Trumpers who believed that people were committing in-person voter fraud, and they themselves tried to vote twice, and they are now either awaiting trial or already in prison for what they did during the last election because they believe they could, with impunity, commit in-person voting fraud. There is no in-person voting fraud. And that which does exist isn't making a difference in the vote counts. There is, however, election fraud. And the election fraud is the real problem. And these open source voting machines that flip the votes and don't keep a good record, this is honestly the issue that we should be paying attention to. But once again, with the right hand doing some dirty deeds and with the left hand going, oh, look, there's black people kneeling at football games. Don't take your eye off the ball. Take a look over there. What they're doing with these voting machines is criminal. Speaking of the minimum wage earlier, I want to play this clip. It's from one of the last debates during the John Ossoff and Karen Handel election in Georgia. And it draws this clear line between the two parties.
Does either candidate support a minimum wage increase? Mr. Ossoff starts with you.
Yes, I do. The minimum wage should be a living wage. I think we can raise it indexed to the cost of living because the cost of living varies widely in urban and rural areas and in different states across this country. I think that increase needs to be implemented at a pace that allows business owners to adapt their business plans so they're not shocked. Their business plans are not shocked by a sudden increase in labor costs. But look, if someone's working a 40-hour work week, they deserve the kind of standard of living that Americans expect. That's part of the American dream, and there are too many folks who are having trouble making ends meet.
Minimum wage.
This is an example of the fundamental difference between a liberal and a conservative. I do not support a livable wage. What I support is making sure that we have an economy that is robust with low taxes and less regulation so that those small businesses that would be dramatically hurt if you impose higher minimum wages on them are able to do what they do best, grow jobs and create good paying jobs for people in the 6th District.
And there it is, right there. She said it herself, I do not support a livable wage. And that wasn't a mistake. And with that kind of a statement, she still won. So the other thing I want to point out for conservatives that are not serving anybody and yet continuously getting elected. So I talked about recently on this program about the 7th Amendment. So there are a lot of companies that would like to force you into what they refer to as kangaroo court forced arbitration. And that is to say that you cannot sue them. Until recently, you had a Seventh Amendment right, to sue these banks and these credit card companies and Equifax for leaking all your information. You had the right to class action sue these people for their dirty deeds. And now they can force you into arbitration, which is where they get to limit your damages if you collect any damages at all. And this last week, that bill that was making its way through Congress, and I talked about it on this show, that bill passed the House full of Republicans, and it passed the Senate with one small qualifier. It got 50 votes, 50-50. And then Pence came in as the tiebreaker. And just like that, your Seventh Amendment right to sue is stripped away. So think about that. You just lost your Seventh Amendment right with a bill that was passed by a Republican Congress, you know, and a tie that was broken by a Republican vice president. Imagine the hell that would be raining down right now if it were the Second Amendment that was effectively repealed, that you that no longer applied to your life. Think about how people would be losing their minds right now, but it's okay. Because all you do is gave up your Seventh Amendment right to sue these banks and credit card companies that screw people over all the time. And it's like, they really do that. They don't really do that. Do they? Yeah, they do. And that's the kind of thing that happens that, A, because we're not paying attention. And that kind of stuff happens. We lose those rights. And we don't even know that we've lost them until we try to sue. And they go, oh, well, you know what? Can't do anything. Because these congressmen and women that you voted for, that voted to strip this right away from you, well, you voted for them. So this is clearly what you want. Whenever I hear my wife get frustrated, she goes, oh my God, I can't. Why? I go, this is clearly what people want. And she says, no, this is clearly not what people want. And I say, no, this is clearly what they wanted. This is what they voted for. No, she says, I don't think this is what they want. I just don't think they know. And aha, of course, there it is. They don't know. And I'm not entirely sure why they're not paying attention. So we're okay with getting screwed over as long as it's not by the government. We're okay if corporations screw us over. That's just fine. And I've heard a lot throughout my life about these paranoid people. Oh my God, the government is watching me. The government's listening in. They're bugging my home, bugging my phone. They're listening to us through the microwave. I don't know. Wacky, wackadoodle stuff. It would seem like these aren't real people. But they got these concerns about the government. Oh my God. So, do you have an Echo? Do you have a Dot? Or any of these other devices inside your home that are sold to you by these corporations that allow you to be bugged by these corporations? If you look in the terms and conditions for these things, you say Alexa or Dot or whatever, play Fats Domino, you dance back and forth to some Fats Domino in your kitchen. Those things are listening all the time, and they're collecting information on you. And they're not collecting information so that they can, you know, break into your house or whatever, but they're collecting information because they then package that information and they sell it. But they're listening all the time, and you paid to let them in, and it got a little bit worse this week, a little bit creepier, when Amazon introduced the Amazon Key. So what is this? This is a door lock and a camera that you buy. Starts at $250. You put it in your house, or you hire someone to do it, even more money for someone else. And then Amazon, when they have a package that they want to deliver to your house, well, they can just let themselves in. And it's just like that. Now, it's not like they're going to come in, rifle through your stuff and, you know, dig through your panty drawer or whatever. You got a camera, so you'll be able to see what they're doing. But think about it. All this paranoia about the government listening, coming into our house, ripping us off, all this concern. And then when the corporations do it openly and ask you for your credit card number so that they can do these things to you, for some reason, we just readily give that stuff up. I think if we think about it in those terms, it'll help us understand what the real problem is, what the real issues are. And nobody should get to do these things. And we most certainly shouldn't pay for it. I don't have an Echo in my house. And I'm not letting Amazon in when I'm not home. They've got a pretty liberal return policy, and which is to say, if I say something didn't show up, they send me another. And it's just like that. They're very trusting. You don't get to freaking come in my house. But why are people so willing when it's a private corporation and then so resistant when it's the government, which is them, which belongs to them? And the last thing is this. I heard a talk this week about fear. Fear and courage. And I heard a gentleman talking about the riots that broke out after one of the recent police killings. And he said, and the fear, it just ran rampant in the streets. It was contagious. But then when somebody did something good, he says, I noticed that was just as contagious as well. I've listened to right-wing radio for just about half of my life now. And the modus operandi of that entire platform is to make you afraid, to make you run in fear and buy a gun and a fallout shelter and a year's supply of freeze-dried food because, oh my God, the world's coming to an end and you've got to hide so you can live. So you've got to die so that you can live. And that kind of fear is contagious. But then again, so is courage. Courage can also be contagious. So I'm not in front of the television cameras. And I'm not a politician in an office somewhere. And I'm not a CEO. And I'm not a millionaire. So when I take the stances that I do and do so publicly, it would be a stretch to say that what I'm expressing here is courage. Because the position that I am beginning in isn't all that impressive. Now, if I were, say, Bob Corker, who is critical of the president, and I had voted against this bill that strips people of their Seventh Amendment right. Oh, and by the way, Corker voted with Donald Trump on that. So for all the criticism, he still voted with him. Now, if Corker voted against that and maybe even quit his party, that would be courageous. So I suppose what I do here is not cannot be seen as courageous. But what I'm trying to do here is inject ideas and hope that those ideas plant a seed and hope that that seed grows. I heard another talk about boredom this week, about how important boredom is and how we're losing the ability to be bored. Because at the first sign of boredom, we automatically flip to our phones. But when do we get our best ideas? We get our best ideas when we're bored. We're sitting there. We're thinking. We're in the shower, washing our big toe, sitting on the toilet. I don't sit on the toilet a lot. I do a lot of my thinking, and I get my best ideas while I'm running. I think about this show while I'm running, and then that's what I hit the microphone with. And that's another thing, these devices that are in our hands that are stripping us of our ability to think. Sometimes it helps us, but largely it's stripping us of our ability to think. It's taking our attention and it's refocusing it. And you can sit for hours on this freaking thing and do absolutely nothing. And I think part of that's the point. Because if you're not thinking, you're not doing anything, you're not learning anything, you're definitely not going to rise up and say anything. You're definitely not going to become one of these people that is the sand in the gears, so to speak. So my message to you today is, yeah, there are a lot of things out there that could make us afraid. A lot of things out there that'll make us shrink, and a lot of things that'll make us really not want to be a part of this country or this planet right now. Thank you very much. But hope and courage, those things can be infectious as well. And those things can also be very useful. And we've been in dark periods of history before. And we're going to be there again. Maybe you and I may or may not see it. Maybe our kids will see it. But whatever it is, we go through these cycles. And there are things that we can do. And the first thing we need to do is not shrink in fear. We need to stay engaged. We need to continue paying attention. We need to get out there and join the fight. We need to listen to Melvin's show. You don't have to do that. But get your good information from somewhere. Holy hell. Because these ideas can be infectious too. They can also be contagious. And that kind of a thing, that is what I hope people will get from a lot of this. I don't need glory. I don't need money. I'm doing fine. But from a countryman, for everyone else, for these other people, for the folks that are on welfare, for the folks that don't make, above minimum wage, people without health care, people without homes, all these lingering problems that we have. And the fight that we're having right now is how big a tax cut should Charles and David Koch get? Think about that. It's insane. The fight we're having right now is how awful life must be for billionaires in this country because of all these freaking taxes they have to pay. While you pay increasingly more and more taxes to not only pay for their tax cuts, but to pay to take care of your countrymen. Maybe. A little bit of focus, a little bit of perspective. I believe that we can figure all this stuff out. We know what we need to do. And what we seem to lack right now is the will. And where there's a way, well, you'll find a will. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Official homes, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us at facebook.com/tfycpo. Listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. I think I stumble on that word every week. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. Still feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off, and now that I've woken you up, good morning.